Hello, welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast, your weekly insight into the world of Formula One. And finally, after what seems like months of unending Mercedes dominance, we have a different winner in Formula One. Welcome to the Grand Prix 24/7 podcast. I'm Will Dodds, and I'm joined once again by the editor of the Grand Prix 24/7 website, Ben Stevens. Ben, it seems that we finally have a non-Mercedes winner for the first time since Interlagos, I think in November last year. How does it feel?
Oh, mate, it's fantastic, isn't it? I think we were getting to the point where it was fair to say they might just run away and win every single race. At least that's what it seemed like to the first four races. So for Max to come along and completely flip the script the way he has is just fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that I've been certainly giving Red Bull a bit of stick, but I still don't think that necessarily is unwarranted, but it just seems that things played into their hands this weekend with the tyre compounds, and it was kind of a perfect storm. And I think with the hot weather that we're likely to experience in Spain this weekend and then on to Belgium and Italy, I think we could see more of it.
Yeah, that's the hope, isn't it? I think Spain, especially this weekend, as you say, will be quite the interesting test. The one thing that sort of makes it hard to sort of count on is the fact that the tyres this last weekend in Silverstone were obviously different than what would have been under a normal race, because we saw a normal race the week before with normal tyres. So maybe the fact that it's just this one race in Spain doesn't lend itself as well to something crazy, because they've picked tyres that are, you know, what they think is absolutely the best for the track. But we'll see. Definitely the heat seems to be Mercedes' weakness to some degree. And, we just have to take whatever we can get at this point.
So you're not expecting a repeat of Spain 2013, where Hamilton started second and ended up finishing outside the top 10. Not quite that much.
Not quite.
Tire deck.
No.
Maybe not. So on to, firstly, before we get to the race, I guess we'll have a quick word on the Racing Point decision. Obviously, I think this kind of sets a bit of a strange precedent for Formula One, the fact that, you know, that they're losing a pretty negligible amount of points, you would think, and you know they're still allowed to use this part. I think this is a story you've been covering for the site. So, kind of, what's your insight on it, Ben?
Yeah, well, I think I was on the record on this podcast as saying I don't think anything would come of it, and obviously that was wrong, big time. But for me personally, I still kind of stand by the argument I made back then, in that we know that the FIA went to the factory and Racing Point said they showed them the brake ducts. I believe they've stuck by the story that they didn't look at the brake ducts on that factory visit. And my question, and I wrote this a few days ago in my morning after, I believe it was my Friday one, I said, well, I think that's sort of beside the point. If your job is to enforce these rules and Racing Point have come to you and said, hey, are we doing anything wrong? And you're not looking at a listed part, which is, you know, it's quite obvious what that means, at least to the FIA it should be, then you've really dropped the ball. So the fact that it's got to this point where we've gotten this far into the season and no one's known, you know, whether it's legal or not, it really should have been headed off at the pass. And then you add to that, as you say, that you've got this punishment which has seemed to satisfy no one, and I think it's almost certainly going to go to the Court of Appeal at some point. It's very strange. That's what happens, though. This is what happens when you don't sort of address things early, because you've got the situation where, quite rightly, the FIA has said, well, Racing Point can't forget what they know now, so making them use another brake duct would be sort of, or design another brake duct would be sort of illogical. Yeah, it's all very strange, and it's just one big cluster biff, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's slightly different to Ferrari with the fuel flow irregularity in their power unit last season, because that was like something they'd done wrong. That was like the component was illegal. Whereas, yes, in this case, the component itself isn't illegal. It's the fact that they copied it, which is illegal. So, as you say, like, they're not just going to design a worse brake duct and you know they have all this knowledge now. So yeah, it's a really confusing one. On a less serious note, I think that some of the great content that this has generated really was probably my highlight of the weekend. Firstly, Toto Wolff saying, you know, we'll take anyone to court. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like come at me kind of thing. I thought that was really funny. And secondly, Papa Stroll's kind of weird video that he made. Yeah, that was also great. And I advise anyone who hasn't seen that to watch it because, yeah, that was just weird. But onto the actual racing. Obviously, we had Bottas beating out Hamilton by about half a tenth to pole position, which obviously good performance from Bottas. But I think we've seen across the seasons that, you know, Bottas definitely does have that in his locker. He doesn't quite do it enough, but yeah, a good performance from him. And I think Hamilton wasn't particularly happy about it. I don't think he likes being outqualified, especially at Silverstone. But I think the real big story of qualifying was Nico Hülkenberg, an unbelievable performance to put that car at P3. And I think that underlines perhaps just how much pace there is in that racing point. And perhaps, again, looks at, you know, what has Stroll been doing to get the most out of it?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? I think it was easy after the first week Nico was in the car to say, oh, you know, he just... he doesn't have it necessarily, or maybe he's just, you know, he's no better than Stroll or whatever. And I wouldn't completely go the other way and say, yeah, he's definitely better than Stroll. But clearly there's a lot of pace to extract from the car, as there should be. It's the car that won the championship last year, more or less. And on Saturday, you know, Nico did a fantastic job. And we've seen that a few times with him where he's been able to qualify in the top three. He maybe hasn't done it as consistently as people would have liked, even though he's had, you know, lesser cars. And like last year, he was, I think, beaten quite comprehensively by Daniel Ricciardo on Saturdays. But it proved that what you know, we all hoped to be true, which is that he's still a very quick driver. And that's nice to see.
Yeah, I think that is... definitely something that he proved. And yeah, I think for Hülkenberg, I think if you look at his career up until kind of 2015, he was undoubtedly one of the best drivers outside of the top teams, undoubtedly. And he was very unlucky not to kind of get that call up. And maybe the last few seasons, he's just kind of plateaued a little bit and hasn't shown his best. But I think the fact that he's been out now, and this was really his opportunity to put himself back in the shop window. I think he did an absolutely brilliant job. And yeah, really, really happy to see it. But onto the race itself, obviously there was an interesting factor, which is that Max Verstappen managed to get through Q2 on the harder tyre, which meant that he was starting on the hards, whereas Mercedes was starting on the mediums. And if you actually cast your eye back to last week, that actually meant that Max was starting on the mediums, as they would have been during the British Grand Prix, and Mercedes was starting on the softs. So this was kind of really where everything kind of came apart from Mercedes, in that Verstappen just had a more durable tyre. He was also driving a car that was able to manage its tyres better and cause less blistering. And that's pretty much where he got the jump on the Mercedes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where you've got, as much as Max has done a fantastic job, that call on the Saturday is a significant part of it. You've got to take your hat off to the Red Bull pit wall for going with that. And sort of what might have seemed beforehand, obviously it wasn't really a gamble, but it might have seemed a gamble at the time. I think, you know, the thing about Red Bull is when they're in the position they are where... Maybe before yesterday, you didn't think, and they didn't think, you know, they can challenge Mercedes in a straight fight. And whether you would call what happened on Sunday a straight fight or not, that's kind of up for debate. But it does allow you to do these sort of outside the box, to a degree, sort of things, like go through Q2 on hard tyres. And obviously, it paid off in a big way.
Yeah, it really did. And I think another thing that probably played a part in this was that obviously we had Bottas and Hamilton kind of battling early on. And that certainly wouldn't have helped manage their tyres, especially when you see every other car kind of separating to about a 2-second gap. almost, you know, straight away, because they knew how bad that degradation was. And you look at how early all these cars were pitting. Whereas Hamilton and Bottas kind of went for it, and it took Hamilton a while to start kind of dropping back. And I think that that really cost him in terms of his tyres. It put him on the back foot, and it put him really vulnerable to Max. And, you know, I think Bottas in making those defences, and perhaps, you know, not being the greatest tyre manager as we've seen in the past, perhaps, you know, having critical on his left front and his left rear within six laps, I think that shows, you know, maybe those two going at it so quickly at the start really penalised them in a way that they probably didn't expect.
Yeah, I think to your point that these last two races have been the first two where those Amazon tyre graphics have actually meant something. And as you say, it's definitely hasn't helped them to be battling as they were. And that's always going to happen, I think, when you've got the slower driver, not that he's slow, but slower in Valtteri in front of Lewis. You know, you're going to be sort of in that situation where both drivers are pushing and you can't really separate yourselves or take it easy. And then you've got Max running a very different race. You know, obviously that works to advantage. At the same time, there's clearly just something that Mercedes does that makes the tyres worse or isn't as conducive to keeping the tyres alive when there's a bit of heat about. And, you know, that those things combined, you know, it was just sort of a perfect storm in many ways working against Mercedes.
Yeah, it really was. And obviously, kind of based initially on the kind of pit stop strategy, Max comes out behind Bottas but gets past him. And then pretty much from there, he's won the race. You know, his tyres are more durable. He's got more speed and he goes on to win. And as you say, you know, I know we've talked a lot about tyres already, but it really was a brilliant performance from Verstappen. And it would be unfair to suggest that, you know, that was just a routine win because, you know, he had the faster tyre strategy on the day, because I don't think there are many drivers on the grid who could have done that and who would have taken that decision to say, no, the Mercedes are under pressure. I know that I'm quicker than them. I'm going to put pressure on them. And then I think that forced them into decisions that they didn't want to take. And it just shows that Mercedes, as much as they are a brilliant, brilliant team, you know, anyone can make mistakes or, you know, can be forced to kind of highlight their areas of weakness when they're put under pressure. And that was so good that Red Bull were able to do that. And, you know, that really won them the race. And that was only because of the brilliant driving from Verstappen. I think just quickly before we move on, because there are loads of really interesting storylines, I think, further down the grid as well. What did you make of Valtteri being upset after the race? I felt that, personally, it looked at the time like he was getting the better strategy, or he was getting the kind of, you know, number one car in that race strategy. You know, it would have been weird if he'd have stayed out. And at that point, I don't think that that's kind of what you would expect. And secondly, I think that we saw in Hungary as recently as two races ago that Bottas can't necessarily make that kind of tyre advantage at the end of the race strategy work as well as Hamilton can. And you know, Bottas said that, you know, they were sleeping on strategy, but I don't know necessarily if he'd have made it work in the same way. But I don't know. What do you think about his comments and just this tyre strategy between the two Mercedes in particular?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think... I understand where he's coming from in terms of just being frustrated and having this chance to gain points in the championship slip away the way it did. But I don't think he has, in terms of actually critiquing the strategy, he has much of a leg to stand on. Hindsight's obviously 50-50, but even before the race, and, you know, going through it, so Pirelli's preview before the race, there were two optimum strategies. One was 15 lap stints on the medium, and then a 22 lap stint to the flag on the hards. And the equal one was 12 laps on the medium, and then two 20-lap stints on the hards. And Valtteri's actual stint in the race was 13 laps on the medium, and then 19 on the first set of hards, 20 on the second. So it's not like they were doing anything particularly stupid or unwise. It's, you know, it was what Pirelli's saying was the best to do. It was basically what he did. the fact it didn't work out goes to show that there's always, I think we all know this, you know, when we take a step back and take the emotion out, there's always a sort of margin of error when you're working with tire lengths and tire stints and how long a driver can maintain performance in those tires. So, yeah, I think as harsh as it is to say to Valtteri, you've just got to suck it up and take it because he didn't have the goods and the strategy isn't really what cost him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is partly frustration. And maybe he's just being a bit kind of, as they say in the Simpsons, embiggened by his new contract.
Great word.
That he received from Mercedes. But yeah, let's get away from Mercedes. We talk about them just about enough, I think. But yeah, some really interesting storylines down the field. Firstly, we've got the two drivers at Ferrari and their kind of converse fortunes. I think firstly we'll just quickly chat on Charles Leclerc. You know, excellent race, very well executed. You know, he seemed really chuffed at the end, and I think that potentially even more happy than he was last week where he was on the podium. But I think this time he knew that, you know, he had, you know, this wasn't down to attrition, this was down to the way that he pulled off that strategy. And I think that yeah, it was a great drive from him.
Absolutely. Yeah, he just showed his quality. It's simple as that. And as you say, when you've completely earned something on merit, as he has this week, whereas there was quite a bit of fortune working in his favour last week, you can sort of understand why he's saying this felt like a win. The fact that it does feel like a win is very concerning for Ferrari in general, but for his individual performance, yeah, you're just going to say, well, I can understand why, and hats off to him.
At the moment, I think that even a point would feel like a win to Sebastian Vettel, though. This was just a nightmare weekend for Seb. And, you know, I've defended him, you know, a fair amount on this podcast in the past. And, yeah, it's quite sad to see. I don't know if there's necessarily, like, a problem with the car, but I just think that in terms of the overall level of support that he's receiving from Ferrari, it's not the same as what Leclerc is receiving. I think that mentally he's a bit disinterested. He's obviously very frustrated. I think it's all these different things coming into play. But I think the really interesting one is, do you think this is, you know, emblematic of the fact that he is losing his touch a little bit?
Yeah, you hate to sort of say that, and I think there's still plenty of chance for him to bounce back. That's the thing we have to sort of keep in mind. Well, that and the fact that it wasn't that long ago that it was Hungary and he was beating Leclerc. So as bad as these 2 weeks have been, and they have been absolutely terrible, I'm not going to count him out just yet by any means. But you're right. His mental state seemed to deteriorate significantly in these two races at Silverstone, and whether that's down to him just not being comfortable with the car itself doing something, you know, dodgy, or it was the team's lack of support for him. It could be a combination of all three. I don't know, but something has clearly changed there, and the tensions are rising. I think as evidenced by sort of the little tete-a-tete that him and Mattia Bonotto had on Sunday, that yeah, it's definitely cause for concern. I think it's interesting though that today on the other side is that Bonotto has come out and said, well, yeah, we will consider giving him a new chassis, and maybe there's something, you know, fundamentally wrong with the chassis. So, you know, obviously Ferrari wants to win points, so they're not going to completely, you know, submarine the guy's chances. But yeah, it's just, if you're just taking these 2 weeks at face value, it definitely doesn't seem like he's in a good spot at the moment.
Yeah, it's so difficult. It's just one of those things in Formula One, because there are so many different variables that it's impossible to put your finger on exactly what's going wrong, but something definitely is. From my perspective, I don't think that he necessarily has, like, lost it. I'm sure that you put him in a different scenario and he could still be producing good performances. As you say, it wasn't long ago that he was beating Leclerc in Hungary. You know, he had pole positions and wins last season. You know, he wasn't too far off Leclerc in general. So I don't think that he's a bad driver. And you know, we're all saying how great Leclerc is, and you know, Leclerc beat Vettel by a pretty like negligible margin last season, and I think Vettel probably had a little bit more bad luck. So he's obviously still a top end driver. It just needs to change the circumstance, and you know, I just want him to be in a better situation. I want Ferrari to be in a better situation. This is just not working for either of them. So, you know, maybe he walks out before the end of the season, because I do not think that he's enjoying this one little bit. And it's a sad way to see that his Ferrari career end, considering, you know, how much this meant to him when he first went there. But moving on to another driver who's probably feeling a little bit of pressure is Alex Albon. You know, he made some really nice moves, really exciting to watch. But at the same time, you know, he was still miles off his teammate who won the race, and you know, starting ninth on the grid, finished fifth. You know, as much as you know, making a move around the outside at Copse on Kimi Räikkönen, it's great to watch. You know, he shouldn't. You know, passing Kimi Räikkönen isn't what he needs to do to maintain that Red Bull seat. He needs to be at the front. He needs to be battling with Hamilton and Bottas and Verstappen. So yeah, I just think that. I definitely think that there's something there with him. I think Red Bull should stick with him, because I don't think that changing again will help. And I definitely think that a big part of this is just that maybe Red Bull don't know what they're doing when it comes to managing the second driver in this situation. But yeah, I don't think this was a brilliant performance from Albon, even though he did pull off some pretty nice moves.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you, because the passes themselves, as you say, like, they're impressive passes, but when it's on an Alfa Romeo, I mean, that's not what you should be racing against in the first place. And that's the concern. And, you know, he can say, oh, well, I've got my Sundays together, or I wouldn't agree with that, but he seems to think so. And, you know, it's just qualifying he's going to work on. But it's not like he has to gain a tenth. He has to gain a lot more than that, be where he should be in that car. I mean, what was he on Saturday? He was on 26, 669, and Verstappen was 176. So he was about 5/10 off, and that's been a pretty consistent margin, I think, throughout the season. And that's a massive margin. And the fact that you're getting out-qualified as he was on Saturday by an AlphaTauri, Pierre Gasly, that's still not good enough. I think, as you say, he'll probably have the rest of the season to sort of work through it. But the second that Red Bull has provably a car that is competing for a Constructors' Championship, I think they should be looking elsewhere still. I mean, there's still time to turn around, but based on what we've seen so far, you'd have to look elsewhere, because he's clearly not fulfilling the role of wingman.
Yeah, I think that you give him to the end of the season, as you say, see if he can work it out. But I really think that Red Bull... And I don't think going back to Pierre Gasly is necessarily the right idea. I think Gasly is another driver who probably would benefit from leaving and getting out of like Red Bull as an organisation. Because I don't think that there is the you look at how Gasly's performing now, and there's just no way that he was managed properly at Red Bull, because he's undoubtedly really quick. Like, undoubtedly quick. And there's no way that he's 5/10 slower than Verstappen in every session. There's just no way. They're definitely a side on the Red Bull management side. But if I was Red Bull, I would be looking outside their driver program now. I think the time's come that where they need to just go and get a reliable old hand who can support Verstappen and be his wingman, just be the Bottas to Verstappen's Hamilton, you know. I would be looking at the likes of Hülkenberg, Perez. They're both potentially available. You know, I think that they're much more of a sure thing in terms of reliable performance than potentially Albon is. You know, I think Hülkenberg's qualifying, you know, P4, P3 in that Red Bull, if you give him the opportunity. So I think that it's time for them to look outside their driver program. And I guess there are a couple of other drivers and performances we should probably highlight. The contrasting performance of the Renaults, Ricciardo looked rapid all weekend, you know, qualifying fifth, potentially could have even done better, but then yeah, a bit of a kind of amateurish spin in the race and, you know, ends up P14, whereas Ocon doesn't have quite the qualifying speed of Ricciardo at the moment, but he pulled off a really nice race and, yes, bagged some important points for him.
Yeah, I think as much as I had to do it, I did have Daniel as my worst of the day yesterday. I think being as good as he was on Saturday and then, you know, having, as you say, that sort of amateurish spin, it's just not what we expect from him. And he's obviously much better than that. But, you know, when it happens, you have to call it out. And then at the same time, yeah, Ocon, I think, has been maybe not quite as close, generally speaking, to Daniel as he would have hoped. He's had his days for sure, but maybe not up there. But then, yeah, on Sunday, just a steady drive. And he's not going to outperform the car, but when the car is capable of points, as it was there, I mean, you know, he did the job. And that's you know, you can't knock that.
I think Ricciardo would be really frustrated because he's been driving excellently all season. And this was a real slip up. And, you know, with McLaren not looking great, and, you know, a bit of uncertainty of a racing point and their drivers, you know, I think he's got to be taking all the opportunities he can, because he could actually get a really nice finish in the standings, because that Renault looks to be working quite well. He's driving really well. So I think he'll just be annoyed at letting a really good opportunity to get P5, P6 slip, because, yeah, he can't be throwing away those opportunities. And, you know, he was P4 the week before, following that up with a P5. That's a brilliant couple of weeks' work for Ricciardo and Renault. And that was very much within the realm of possibility. And yeah, he made a silly mistake. And yeah, I think he'll just be annoyed with that. But on to our predictions before we preview the Spanish Grand Prix. It has been a completely unsuccessful week for the both of us, which is becoming less and less surprising as the weeks go by. I went for a Hamilton Bottas Hulkenberg podium, and you went for a Hamilton Bottas Leclerc podium. So none of us score a point there. For my first DNF prediction, I went for Romain Grosjean and you went for Daniil Kvyat. Grosjean's teammate Magnussen was actually the first DNF, so neither of us scored there. Actually, just an interesting side note, my flatmate is actually working in Denmark this week, and he was on the same flight as Kevin Magnussen, so that's an interesting thing. Yeah, so that happened. Anyway, looking ahead to the Spanish Grand Prix, obviously we know it's going to be hot, and we know that potentially might play into the hands of Red Bull, but with the tyre compounds going back to kind of the usual that Pirelli would kind of advise, do you expect to see Mercedes back on top? How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, I think that's basically what I said at the start, was unless the tyres just happen to be completely wrong, the way they were intentionally wrong in this last week, I don't think it'll be enough of a problem for Mercedes to stop them from, you know, completely losing their you know, general pace advantage. Having said that, it could be close enough where Max is battling and, you know, gets himself between the two Mercedes on a Saturday. That wouldn't surprise me one bit. But yeah, when all things are said and done, if I had to pick a podium, and I do, because that's what we do, my podium would be Hamilton, Verstappen, and then Bottas.
Interesting. Pretty conservative choice, and to be honest, I can't blame you.
I mean, I learnt my lesson after last week. That was, you know, I thought, think outside the box and look how that worked out for us. Picked Charlie Leclerc. Yeah.
I think the thing with Mercedes is that I look back to weekends where they've struggled in the past. You look at Germany last year, and they follow that up with Hamilton producing a brilliant win at Hungary. You know, you look at Interlagos last year.
Yes.
And then you follow it up with a complete domination from Hamilton in Abu Dhabi. They're just a team that learns from their mistakes quickly, and they rarely make two in a row. So I'm sure that they will come up with something. But I think Verstappen is driving so well, and, you know, the issues they're having with their tyres at Mercedes is generally related to, like, their entire aerodynamic concept, their suspension concept. So this isn't something that you can just turn around in a week. Maybe they'll get the strategy better. Maybe going through to in Q2, they'll look to go through on the hards because they are just so much quicker than everyone else. You know, maybe they can adapt that kind of stuff. But if this is a fundamental issue, which is my limited understanding of tyres suggests that it is, this isn't something you can turn around in a week. But I expect their strategy to be better. And I think they just got that such an advantage that, you know, they can do well. So I'm going to go for Hamilton for the win. But I'm also going to go for Verstappen second and Bottas third.
Boring. But what can we do?
being alternative and quirky and choosing Nico Hülkenberg to be on the podium is fun when you do it. But then when you come to review it the week later, you just look like an idiot. So...
Exactly, and I already look like enough of an idiot as it is. So you know,
on to first DNF. Neither of us have got any of these right all season. So I think I'm just going to stick with my safe bet, my banker, and just go with Grosjean again.
Yeah, it's you pick it enough, it's going to come right eventually with our old mate Romain, isn't it? I think for me though, I am going with. Because my pick was so, my podium pick was so boring, I'm going to get a little bit funky here and go with George Russell for first DNF. I think maybe he just qualifies, you know, he'll be hopefully Q2 again, and he gets stuck in with the likes of, you know, Seb Vettel, who's sort of qualifying around where he is these days, or maybe an Ocon, someone like that, a Kvyat, and something a bit unfortunate happens
from
there.
Interesting. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. Just before we go, just want to have a quick kind of more general chat about the circuit to Barcelona Catalunya. It's a circuit that I kind of don't really understand because it can produce some good racing. You know, look back to 2012 when Pastor Maldonado won there. I guess the famous one people always talk about is Schumacher in 96 in the rain, where he just completely dominated. Although I wouldn't say that was necessarily, you know, I don't think lapping everyone is necessarily the sign of a good race. But what do you think of it as a circuit? It's something that gets a lot of stick, but it's one I can't really work out.
Yeah, I think that final chicane, I think, is what sort of hurts it more than anything. I think the rest of the track is quite an interesting track, but that final chicane seems to really stop cars from closing in on the main straight and, you know, making those passes down to the first corner as much as we would like. But yeah, it's definitely, as someone, I've been to that circuit. I covered the 2017 race there, and it's a great circuit to be there and watch the cars, and you really appreciate how bloody fast these cars are going through some of those corners. So yeah, it's as you say. There's room for interesting things to happen. Whether they will, there's by no means any guarantees. And then again, maybe that's an aspect where if the heat in these particular tyres plays into it, we get a few more pit stops or just some degradation happens that brings cars closer to each other or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not ruling it out. It's not always. It's not always deserving of the sort of the boring reputation it has.
Yeah, I think the point you make about the heat is probably the key here, isn't it? If we see that level of heat causing real tyre problems, then I think we're in for a cracker again. If that's at a manageable level, as you say, with that final chicane, it does make following really difficult down that back straight. And there aren't loads of real overtaking spots. They kind of there is another straight towards the middle of the track. I don't know the exact turn number it's coming out of, but it's not quite long enough, and I don't think the DRS is quite powerful enough for moves to be kind of done there regularly. I remember actually maybe 2015 Sebastian Vettel made a habit of pulling moves down in that spot, but it's not kind of a classic overtaking place. But yeah, I think it, as you say, it can be interesting. Obviously, a huge part about it is that they test us so much, so they have so much data. All the drivers are so used to it. Very, you know, you're not seeing people go off and hit the wall in Spain because they've done it millions of times, not millions, but thousands of times, thousands of laps there. And it just does mean that there's going to be less attrition and just like slightly less unpredictable. But yeah, no, fingers crossed, hoping for a good race. And, you know, if we do get that intense sun, then I'm sure we will.
Yeah, that's the hope, isn't it? And, you know, we don't have to go back to, I mean, look like 2016 Spain, that was an absolutely fantastic race. There's definitely been some crackers there, and, you know, why can't it happen?
Here's hoping that the two Mercedes crash into each other in the first corner. Anyway, thanks very much, Ben, for joining me once again, and thank you to everyone for listening. Do go and check out our website, www.grandprix247.com, and follow us on Twitter at grandprix247.
Also, if I can just give a special plug real quick, Will, we've started this week. If anyone's been to the site, they'll see we've got banners up for a new partnership with GP Box. If you don't know what GP Box is, basically they're a motorsport memorabilia merchandise marketplace. You go there, you get everything. You get, you know, your team gear, all the official stuff. There's fantastic stuff by, you know, independent creators, all sorts of artwork and all that sort of stuff. And so basically, if you're an F1 fan, you want to decorate your house, decorate yourself, you want collectibles, that's the place to go to. And if you want to support us, which hopefully you do, we've got banners on our site pages. Just click through there and we get a little commission.
Brilliant.
For doing that.
And sounds like a great idea. Awesome. And I'll be doing that shortly after finishing recording. But yeah, thanks. Thank you to everyone once again. And we'll speak to you next week.
See ya.